If you have interest in hearing how a guy moves from Malaysia and makes the most of the land of opportunity in the good old USA, you are going to want to hear what James Kandasamy has to say. This guy is a leader in the multifamily space. He's closed deals. He's got a 5,000-plus person Facebook group. He's written a book. He provides coaching. He's done asset management. He's done it all. This guy doesn't have to keep pressing on, but he loves the hunt of the deal, and he loves to educate and impact others. On to the intro.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing. Be introduced to the players that are getting it done and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on James Kandasamy before we start the show. James grew up in Malaysia. He worked for Intel in Malaysia and then came to the U.S. with Intel to help work on a very large project. He started to invest in single family, and after about 11 properties, he realized in order to scale, he needed to break into the multifamily space. He has done 9 deals for over 1,700 units. He lives in the Austin area, and he has no plans to slow down. Now, onto the show. Hello, everyone. Today, I have James Kandasamy with me. James, appreciate you coming on.
Hey, Darren. Happy to be on your show.
Fantastic. So James has a ton of experience, so I'm really looking forward to this. Mm-hmm. So the two of us, we kind of connected through social media. James is a leader in the multifamily space, and I've been kind of watching him from afar through Facebook and other social media avenues, and he's got a podcast, he's written a book, he's got a private Facebook group. This guy has done it all. Mm-hmm. But you know, other than just talking, I actually wanted to meet him personally. So I went down to Austin, and he was kind enough to meet me, and we had a great discussion. So again, James, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for coming from Dallas to Austin. I really appreciated you stopping by and talking to me, meeting to me. I truly appreciate it.
Yeah, it was, I just think I'm still old school. And I think that if you see somebody and you're sitting there with them, it's mm-hmm. still a different connection than doing a Zoom call.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I was happy to do it. And it also gave me a chance to ride a motorcycle down there, and I had a little fun. And you gave me some good suggestions after our meeting on where to go ride. And I had a good time as well. So thank you.
Cool.
Hey, so before we get into the discussion, just high level recap on, how many properties, how many units have you been a part of on the multifamily
space? So we have done almost 1,700 units. We have like almost 1,600 units, 1,650 or something like that. We sold one deal out of our 9 properties. Right now we have like 8 properties. And these are properties where, we are the single GPs, right? I have other passive investment, key principal and all that, which I'm not including into that number. Maybe another 400 or 500 units, I guess. But that's where we are the owner operator. That's completely asset under management. It's almost valued at $130, maybe $140 million.
It's amazing. And you told me your story. Share with the listeners.
Sure.
How'd you come to the U.S.? Where'd you come from? And how'd you end up here?
So I'm from Southeast Asia, a country called Malaysia. It's just nearby to Singapore, in case you guys can't really find out Malaysia, right? But Singapore is very popular.
I have not been there, but Malaysia has this mystique to it, for like great vacationing, right?
Oh yeah, it's awesome. Awesome. The beaches there is awesome. So I came from a state called Penang, which is one of the top tourism city in Malaysia. And there's also a city in Penang, which is called Georgetown. It's one of the UNESCO heritage site. You know, it's all old 1960s, 1940s buildings. So that's where I came from. I'm an electrical engineer. I used to work on a multinational semiconductor company. And I moved through that company to the U.S. They needed me here and I wanted to come to the U.S. as well. So I flew from there through my work. Compared to a lot of people who come here on an immigrant basis, usually people come to study here and stay on, right? But I came through work because of the project that was in trouble. And I love projects in trouble because that keeps me going, right?
You're a problem solver.
Yeah, problem solver in a uncertain times. That's what is good for us. Good for me. I'm really get pumped up with that. So basically moved through that company and worked almost, 7 years on a W-2 job in the U.S. I've worked on a W-2 for almost 22 years before I resigned my job, full-time job, and doing real estate full-time right now.
So is it okay if I share with the listeners the company that brought you over?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm sure they don't care anymore.
So you were working for Intel in Malaysia.
Correct.
And then there was an issue or problem that needed to be solved in the U.S. They felt like you were the guy to help solve that problem. Mm-hmm. And they brought you over to the U.S. and you started working for Intel on the West Coast, correct?
Yeah, in Portland, Oregon. So it's they needed me and I wanted to come too. So it was a good match, you know. So we have a good win-win situation there. So we came here, you know, we solved the problem within 1 year, and after that, you know, things. You know, I'm always been looking for departments in my workplace to make it more exciting, right? Sometimes working a W-2 job can be pretty monotonous because you're doing the same thing over and over again.
Absolutely. And so when you came over, were you already like super wealthy from, multi-generations within Malaysia?
No, we are an okay family. We are not a well-to-do family. I think my parents are just, used to be, working like, low-income job. I'm the only one who came up to college level in my family, right? No one else. And in fact, I'm the only one overseas and I'm the only one in the U.S. right now. So we don't have any other family in the U.S., which makes it a pretty high risk. And I'll go into that later. But I think, we are not like, some families who already have a lot, like tons of relatives in the U.S., they just, get another relative to come here. We are not like that. So I'm the first one to come here, first one to go to college in my family. And, when I came here, I moved in as a senior manager, as an electrical engineering manager. Yeah, my pay was almost like, more than 100,000 at that time. But, I'm starting fresh in the U.S., right? So I don't have any IRA, don't have any 401k. And I brought in like almost 80,000 into this country, into the U.S. And out of 80,000, we bought house. We put in, I can't remember how much was it. But immediately when we came here, within 2 weeks, we bought a house.
Within 2 weeks?
Yeah. Wow, really, we ran and we said, okay, I want to be the traditional guy. I said, let's go and stay in an apartment. And my wife said, no. We are buying a house. I'm not staying in an apartment. So we stayed in a hotel, a two-bedroom hotel. It's a small two-bedroom. I mean, there's not many hotels with a big bedroom, right? So two-bedroom hotel for 2 months. And within 2 weeks, we chose our house to take it to close 2 months. It was 2010. So it was just a really good timing in terms of housing market start to bounce.
Yeah. Yeah. Great timing.
Yeah.
So now you're working at Intel, you're in the engineering field, and at some point you decide to get into real estate. Why did you get into real estate and why did you pick multifamily?
So I'm a very entrepreneurial. So I was trying to do a different business, right? So when we came here, while I was working at night, I used to try to do some website business, some education websites, trying to make, things work online and try to make money, right? Because, US is a land of opportunity, right? So I'm trying to do all kind of things. And I used to work late until 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, midnight, trying to do different business. And, you know, and at some point I did try stocks as well. And stocks is just another roller coaster ride, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It plays with your emotion a lot. And I go up and down all the time and always lose money. Every time I go into stock, within 1 week, I lose money. I can't really leave it more than a week because I'm...
Well, a hard part about stocks is, I mean, if it goes up, you wonder, should I sell and take my profit? And then all of a sudden you sell and it keeps going up. And if you don't, then all of a sudden it drops. And, you know, you're always having to think every day, you know, do I sell? Do I keep? Whatever.
Yeah.
But one of the things I loved what you just said was you said America was the, you know, land of opportunity. Look, I've had a number of guests on here that kind of had the same type of story where they came and they didn't have much and they made it. Uh-huh. And I believe there's a lot of people in the US that take that for granted, that think that it's not as easy as it used to be. And they, you know, it should be handed to them. And, you know, here we have people that come in from out of the country, still believe it and find a way to make it happen. And you're one of those guys. So that's incredible.
Yeah.
So go on in terms of how you decide to get into the multifamily world.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, land opportunities, I'm going to come back to that again, because it's very, very relevant, right? I mean, how can one guy start and, you know, do, you know, what I've been doing, I guess. So basically, I was trying to do all this business and nothing really worked, right? Because it's a bit hard to really do, you know, websites and doing online business. There's a lot of big companies, big startup companies, which has a lot of money, a lot of experience. And I'm trying to get some software developers in overseas trying to do something. And I'm not even a developer. I've never done a development. But I know this. So I've been trying a lot of things. And after 2-3 years, we give up on all this business. And I met a friend who has been doing a single family rental. And I always wonder, how does that work, right? A single family rental, and you say you buy one house per year, right? So at that time in Austin, it was like 100,000, 130,000 per house. And this is not far away.
Not
this
anymore, right?
Yeah, this is like 2013, 2012, right? And then I calculated the house cash and cash return. If you buy a normal house, you know, just put down a normal down payment, let's say 20% down payment of 130, you know, I can buy like two houses. I like $50,000 at that time. And I probably can make like 9% return, right? And 9% return, for me, I want more. But 9% return, just buying a house and it's going by itself, someone's paying your mortgage, and it's a really good amount, really good price, right? So then later I found there are other ways to put much less money, you know, a technique called double closing in single family houses. And then you can put much less down payment, like $3,000-$4,000, and you can get $130,000 houses. So,
wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. So real estate is the only asset that you can buy 20% below market value, and you get 80% loan on it, and you can get like you can push up the cash on cash, right, above the market value as well. So it's crazy how real estate works, right? You can't do that in stock. Stock is like whatever price they're telling you, that is the value for the day.
Right.
Right. Right. And you can't take
mortgage.
And
you're not getting the leverage, you're not getting the tax efficiency. You know, it's
absolutely
so many different factors of real estate just help propel your wealth.
Yeah. So then I went, so I started looking at houses and I started looking at buying houses. So I started buying, in San Antonio because it was much cheaper and I was able to get much better deals there compared to Austin. So we bought like 13 houses. Within 2 years, we accumulated almost 400,000 in equity within that. And we're just surprised. I mean, wow, you can do this, right? You just have to work hard. I mean, it's not easy. I was working full time and my wife was trying to manage. And we used to drive down to San Antonio in a few days a week, right, to look at buying deals. And later on, I move on to multifamily just because single family is not scalable. It's too much work for too little money.
Right, that's a common theme. I never wanted to do single family. I went straight into multifamily, but I've talked to a lot of people that did start in single family, and they when they decided to get into multifamily, it was because it started to become too hard to scale. And I don't know what your number was, but you know, I don't know. The numbers that I hear from other people are somewhere in between 10 and 20, you know, single family properties. It just gets to be so much that they really can't keep on growing. Mm-hmm. So you decide you need to get into multifamily. Well, how do you make that leap?
So I mean, once I started going into 11 house, you know, I can't get loans anymore, right? Unless, you know, I start buying under my wife's name. I think each person can buy like 10 properties. Once you go above 10, you have to go to portfolio loan and all that. I started doing that, but it's just becoming so much of work because the insurance expired different times and you have tenants and toilets and all kind of things, right? So we said, okay, we're going to go and do multifamily. So I did find some mentors to help me out, to scale me into a multifamily, right? And it's a mindset shift. You know, I said in the next 6 months, I'm going to buy a multifamily, right? So we bought our
first. What was your goal? What size multifamily?
50 to, you know, 70 is what I was targeting.
That's a pretty big jump, right? I mean, you could have bought your 12th, you know, single family house, but instead you have a mindset shift and you decide to buy a 50 to 70 unit property.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, the other thing is also, it's very tricky, right? I'm buying single family houses for $3,000 or $4,000 per unit, right? I'm getting 30-50% cash on cash.
Wow, that's crazy.
And when I meet my multifamily guys and they're saying, oh, we are happy with 8-10% cash on cash. I said, so it never makes sense for me. Well, why you need to do multifamily, right? So I've been trying to put Excel spreadsheet and trying to figure out what's wrong here. Why all these guys are excited just because some guru there is telling them or what, right? So I was like, oh, so what? Why are they so happy with 8-9%? And I'm here doing 30-50% cash on cash. Then after a week or maybe 2 weeks after trying to analyze this whole thing, and I realized, okay, so there's one thing in commercial real estate, which is something called forced appreciation. Right. So when you talk about forced appreciation, you can go and force appreciate a value or operational income on an asset, and you can basically refinance out all your cash that you put in. Right. And that is something that you don't get in single family houses. So that makes a lot of sense because now, let's say you refinance out all your money out, you're not talking about 30 or 50% cash on cash. You're talking about infinite return.
Infinite returns.
Yeah. So basically you're making money out of the thin air. Right.
So yeah, that's it. It's an interesting topic. So, you know, a couple things come to mind with that. One is the difference in valuation, right? So single family, anything from 1 to 4 units is going to be valued based on other like properties in the surrounding area. So it doesn't matter if you're renting a unit, a house for, you know, $1,000 a month, and the person next to you is renting the same type of house for $500 a month. Your property is going to be valued similar to that property next door, even though your cash on cash is better, but the valuation won't really change. It's more valued based on surrounding properties.
Yeah.
When you get into multifamily, it's not. It's valued based off of the cash flow of the property, the actual performance. So, you know, the income less the expenses, the net operating income, and that's how it's valued. So you can have two multifamily properties right next to each other. And if one is generating double the income of the one next to it, it will be valued at double the price of the property next to it.
Absolutely.
So that gives you the ability to control and to force the appreciation, as you mentioned.
Yeah, it is a big, it has like, you know, many knobs to turn around, right? To turn it, right? So you can increase income, you can increase your miscellaneous income, you can reduce turnover of people, you know, you can reduce your expenses. So there's many knobs to, you know, tweak in multifamily, right? And you can get a more efficient loan. You can get a loan which is without prepayment penalty, so you can move from one loan to another loan pretty quickly. So there's a lot more exit and a lot more play.
So if you have no prepayment penalty, you must be doing bank loans.
Yeah, in the beginning I did that.
Because the agency loans, the prepayment penalty can be pretty stiff.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, in the beginning, we did bank loans and we did very well with all that.
Fantastic. So you mentioned that your wife was part of your business as well. Yeah. So what are each of your roles?
So she runs the property management and construction management, and I do the acquisition and investor relationship, right? So I do the underwriting, building relationship with investors, and yeah, she does the harder part, I would say, of our work. I do the easier one.
It's funny because there's so much emphasis on, how to get the deal, how to land the deal, how to close the deal. But once you do, that's like the beginning, right? Like now you have to actually perform, Yeah. So
where the rubber meets the road.
That's right. Where the rubber meets the road, right? Yeah. So you mentioned earlier that you had 9 deals. You just sold a deal. Can you share a little bit about the performance on that one deal that went full cycle?
Oh, that's crazy. So, please, I'm telling all your audience, do not take these numbers and think that this is going to happen all the time, even though it has happened a few times. So we made, the first deal we bought was 45 units. We bought it at 1.5 million. And we refinanced 117% after 12 months, which means after 12 months, the building is free and clear. There's none of our money is in the deal, right? So after 12 months, we did that. And when we sold recently, last February, we made almost 332% return in 4 years.
Hey, yeah,
50% IRR.
I can see why you said, listen, listeners, don't think that this can happen again, because I have talked to other people that have had some pretty amazing returns, and they've agreed that, look, we did a lot of things right, but we also had a lot of headwinds just buying at the right time and being in the right market. Mm-hmm. But that's amazing. And when you say that you refinanced out, what's great about that, refinancing and pulling all your capital out, now it's infinite returns. You don't have any of your money in it. But that transaction is a tax-free transaction.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's so when you pull that money out in the refi and you return it, say an investor invested $100,000 with you, and then you said 117%. So now you give him back $117,000. Uh-huh. He's not paying any tax on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, nothing like a free building, right?
Yeah, and then he's getting the cash flow, and then you end it with a huge bang after 4 years. So that's awesome.
Yeah,
I kind of set you up because I didn't ask you that when we met. So the performance may not have been that strong. I should have known the answer to that before I asked you. But
that's okay. I mean, that's okay. And we did the same for the other two deals as well. The first three deals. The second deal, we did almost another 117%. I mean, just coincident, 117% in the second deal as well. After 12 months, we still have that property. So it's free flowing, no cost basis building, which is churning out infinite return for us. If you look at original investment, it's churning out like 7% with zero cost basis in it. Right. And the third deal we did, we almost pulled out 80% within 15 months. So that one we missed by 3 months, but it's still crazy, right? 15 months, it takes 80% out.
That is unbelievable. I wish I was part of that deal. So in any event, you mentioned that you do solo GP. So I've met a lot of syndicators where two, three, four, five guys and girls will get together and they'll all partner in on a deal. You guys have taken the approach of, husband and wife, and just focus on the two of you running the deals, finding the deals, running the deals, raising the capital. Why did you choose that approach, and do you see that changing going forward, or maintaining that same approach?
That's a really good question. Yeah, we are solo GPs. I mean, we have key principal who helps us to sign on the loan, but in terms of GP controlling the deal and, owning the lion's share of the compensation as part of the GPs, is we are the one, right? So, it's just how it is from day one, right? We did single family and 45 units. Yeah, you know, we really didn't need any other partners. There was only four or five people investing in that 45 units. And the next one, we were able to raise another 3.6 million because just people get to know our track record and people start investing. So there's no real need to bring in other partners, right? But as I said, moving forward, as I go, you know, bigger, and you know, our life is really busy. My wife and I life's very busy. We have three kids, young kids, so we can't be doing this all the time, right? So yeah, we are looking at partnership for the right partners. If we need to do it, we will partner up for the right people. Someone who brings something different to the table, right?
Right.
So
that's an interesting topic in itself, because I talk to a lot of people that reach out on Instagram, and there's a lot of people, including myself, when I first got into the business, I remember going to the first networking thing and I was like, I'm a good guy. Like, why don't you partner with me? Right. And that's kind of the approach that I have, that a lot of people approach me with off Instagram. And, you know, I just explained the same thing that I was told is just that you really have to bring value to the table. So when I was at that networking session, the person said to me, well, Darren, if you bring me the deal, you've brought me value. You've done all the work, and you know, I'm the experienced person and I'll partner with you. And if I think it's a good deal, but if I find the deal, you know, that person was saying, if I found the deal, why am I going to ask you? I'm going to ask that person across the room that's done 3, 4, 5 deals. I know that they have existing relationships. I know that they could raise the capital. I know they have the balance sheet. So that opened my eyes and I was glad to hear that early on, because that told me, okay, my approach has to be, I go find the deal and then I present it to an experienced syndicator and then we partner together. So we both bring value to the table. Yeah. So in your case, you guys have been solo GPs, you know, from where I'm sitting, I don't see that changing unless there's somebody else that brings significant value to the table.
Yeah. I mean, one is value, absolutely. The other thing is just the belief system, right? So when you are partnering in a deal, you know, a lot of things are being exposed right now, right? Your response to money, right? Your response to a lot of money, right? So that's where some people's true color shows up, right? And not say true color, they're not bad people, but just people responding to, you know, a sudden gush of money or the opportunity to, change some things that passive investors doesn't know, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a value system. So whoever you're partnering need to have the same value as you. I've seen a lot of partners, and I know a lot of people in the industry, and a lot of partnership breaks because they have value system difference, right? And this you wouldn't know in the beginning, right? When you're starting to dance, you wouldn't know. But as the dance get heated up and different lights, different music comes in, people react differently, right? Especially this involving money. And as a sponsor, you can do a lot of things without passive investors knowing, right? And if your partner doesn't have the same value and belief system and as you are, you'll be, why is he doing that? Oh, I don't feel good. So you don't feel good, partner, right? So you have to really practice the slow dance in the beginning for anybody who want to partner, see whether you're really compatible or not. If it's not comfortable, it's better to just split and go, right? But if it's comfortable, if you're compatible, then of course, then you want to continue, right? So yeah, it's a lot more things than, first is bringing the value. Second is the values, belief system and value itself, the life value and belief value. And how do you respond to money when you are in control of it, right? And how do you work out things between two of them? Are you putting boundaries in terms of roles and responsibilities, and you do what and I do what kind of thing? And you're gonna have some kind of somebody's gonna step on someone else's toes, and as long as you're able to talk it out and figure it out, so it's a lot more things than. Of course, value, yes, but there's a lot more things.
Those are all great points. Somebody that's trying to get their first deal, you don't realize it, but some of these deals can last 3, 4, 5, 6 years, right? So it's not like you're just partnering for 6 months, uh-huh. you're going to be, you know, in this transaction together for potentially a long time. So having a common value system and belief system is extremely important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So James, you also, in addition to raising all this money and buying these properties and managing these properties, you also have some other products and services that you offer. You know, there's a lot of people that have, you know, want to get into the space and they want to learn how to do it, and they want to learn how to do it from somebody that they trust. So you also offer some coaching services. Is that correct?
Yes. I started my coaching services almost like almost like 9 to 12 months a year ago. I started having a small group of students, and you know, I always been teaching people, you know, offline, and you know, spending a lot of time coaching people, whoever call. I mean, you know, right? When people ask, about, find out about, oh, you're doing commercial. Oh, how do you do that? I want to pick your brain. Like, give me some time. So I used to spend a lot of time coaching people, and I realized that, you know, you find people who are, most of the time people are not really serious, or they think they're serious, but they're not really serious, right? And you spend like 2-3 hours on the phone coaching them, giving them materials, and sometimes they don't even read the materials that you give them. Right. Or sometimes they just don't take action, right? Because, you know, it takes a lot of effort to, you know, take action in this kind of space, right? So after a few years of coaching people and wasting a lot of my time and realizing that I'm talking to a lot of people who are really doesn't want to get ahead in life, even though they think they want to get ahead, and a lot of people just do not want to do the hard work, right? Then I said, oh, maybe I should start charging for this, just because first of all, I mean, people will be more serious. They'll be thinking twice whether they want to take my time. Second is, it becomes a filter for me. Whenever people say, I want to pick my brain, I'll say, what are you going to talk about first? If you want to talk about passively investing, yeah, you have my calendar, right? But if you want to ask about how do I do this, that's a big topic, right? I say, well, I have this coaching program, right? And it's important, right? Sometimes 1 hour. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, when we met and you were sharing that with me, I thought it was just a great, great reasoning for putting that together, in the sense that I didn't hear you once say, you know what, Darren, I wanted another revenue stream. I wanted to create a new product so I could, you know, just make more money. It was more about, look, I love to help people, but I want to help the right people. I want to help the people that are committed. I want to help the people that I can actually see, you know, some development with, versus, you know, having a one-off conversation and then getting off and never knowing if that person took action or went on to something completely different the next day. So that was a completely different response than I was expecting. Yeah. And I think it's very admirable.
Yeah, I know people talk about revenue stream. I mean, we make a lot of money on our properties. You know, this is, you know, it's not significant in terms of the education. And I'm just doing this, you know, not a full time, right? It's just a very small time of my time. But I love helping people. I love it when someone come and say, I really want to do this because I need to, you know, and I know a lot of people who really trying hard to come up in life. And it's important for me to give them quality information, right? And if I give them, I need to be happy giving them my time, and they need to be committed to it. At the same time, they have to get full information, A to Z, not like, you know, on a 1 hour call, how much can I tell them, right? Right. I cannot tell them how to do syndication. I wouldn't be able to tell them how to raise money, right? There's so many things, how to underwrite, right? Even underwriting, you know, my class right now takes like, you know, three deals, and we underwrite, you know, one by one. So we are not able to give them when you're talking on the phone for 1 hour or 2 hours, right? So I said, okay, I'm going to do this properly, teach someone properly, and someone who's serious, and I just love it, because, you know, now I have students. I can go in the car, hey, who do I call now? Sometimes you're driving, you do not know what to call. Hey, like, call one of my students, ask them what are they doing, right? So so I'm happy. Yeah, what are you doing? So they are happy because they're getting free coaching, and I'm okay because I love to teach. Right? So
hey, you're both invested in each other. Look, my son is a sophomore in college, and he played baseball since he was five until I think junior year in high school. And, you know, so I was a baseball dad every weekend, and I coached him up all the way till probably he was, I don't know, 11 or 12 or whatever it was, maybe 10. But getting to see the kids on the team, it wasn't just my son. When I was a coach, it wasn't just my son, but I was able to see all the other kids develop. You know, they all started at different levels, you know, but just seeing each one of them improve and their face light up, that's a joy about life, you know, that you were able to help them, you know, improve. And so at our age, you know, this is a way of giving back, is to educate other people on how to grow their wealth, you know, and how to provide for their family in addition to, or possibly in exchange of their W-2 job.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's ultimate happiness if I can take someone from not knowing anything in commercial real estate and get them to buy a deal and change their whole family life.
Yeah.
Right. Because they're going to remember you forever, right? I mean, they're going to remember for you, this guy changed my entire family life, right? So it's a completely different satisfaction than just getting money.
Yeah, I completely agree. And even just syndications, just even with the passive investors, and that's what's got me charged up with this business is, you know, I have another business. All the profit comes to me and my family. But with syndications, you know, I've got 44 limited partners, and if we improve the value of the property, they're going to get, you know, and they're going to get a huge return that's going to increase their wealth. For you, you sold that one deal and provided a 332% return in 4 years. Well, you helped all those families, you know, grow their wealth. And what they do with it, some may give back to charity, right? Uh-huh. Some may help a loved one, you know, a family member, the mother or father who's ill. And another one may take a great vacation with family. But because of the work that you provided, you've potentially helped all those families do a ton of different things with that money.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So, I mean, I didn't realize that until on my second deal when we did a refinance of 117%, I give back their money within 12 months. I mean, there were a few emotional emails that came to me. And these are like grown-up men, right?
Right.
And these are like professional people. Right? They are engineers, software engineers. They say, James, you do not know how much this money means to me. And I was like, oh my God. So just by our effort, you can impact people life, right? I mean, and that's big, right?
That's huge.
It's huge. That's huge. Right?
So, it really is. So, so talk about reputation. You know, in this space, you know, when you're raising money to put into deals, you know, there's a lot of people that are out there doing it, and it could take a while before the returns come back. And you know, how important is reputation, and how does that impact, you know, whether passive investors come back to you and whether they recommend you to other and bring back, you know, other family members and friends? You know, just talk about reputation and what your thoughts are there.
I think, of course, reputation is ultimately important in this, right? That's how, I mean, most of my investors are, I mean, even though I have a big Facebook group, like 5,500, I will get almost zero people who are investing from that group with me, right? So it's not about Facebook group, right? It's about word of mouth referral, right? From our first deal and, you know, as we move along in the second deal, and also how you add value, right? I mean, when I started this business in 2013, 2015, I was starting to write blogs, and nobody was writing about blogs about multifamily investment. I mean, there was a lot of people who were charging for all this information, and I was giving this for free, right? And I started doing webinar, which is focusing a lot on my investors, right? And I wrote a book just for my passive investors. I mean, everybody knows you don't really make money out of a book, right? I probably make like $2 or $3 of each book sold in Amazon. But I think just making sure that people who come and talk to me about this kind of investment, they know what they are getting into, right? They know how to analyze deals. And just adding value to people. I mean, I just did it, not to say to grow my my influence, but I just want to continue to educate people so that people know what are they getting into, rather than they just give them 100 or 200,000 and later they say, oh, I didn't know that. Well, now I haven't. Right. So I, in between deals, I do a lot of educational webinars for people so that everyone learns.
That's fantastic. So I have not gone full cycle, so I can't speak mm-hmm. to that. But one of the things that I do get positive impact contacts on from my investors, mm-hmm. which I find important because I've invested in seven other deals as a passive investor, is mm-hmm. the communication. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, every month as a sponsor, you're going to, you know, send an email out to your investors, giving them an update on the property. And for me, maybe it's not that important to everybody, but for me it was. And so, you know, I looked at all the syndicators that I was doing business with as a passive investor. And I was trying to take the things I liked about, you know, each one of them and kind of mold my own philosophy. But what was important to me was transparency. Uh-huh. You know, I want to know the good, the bad, and the ugly of what's going on, and you know what proactively you're doing as the leader, as the sponsor of that deal, to continue to improve the property and improve the performance. You know, there's some sponsors that send out a short little blurb and then attach a bunch of reports. Uh-huh. Well, I don't really want to analyze all those reports. Uh-huh. You know, I just don't like, I've got my own syndication that I got to send it out to, and I've got other things in my life. And like, I just want to know, hey, where are we at? You know, like, and what, if it's not where it's supposed to be, why, you know, and what are we doing? So communication, I feel, is very important. And it sounds like you take it to a different level. It's just not even on the deals. It's, you want to communicate by writing a book and providing blogs and providing education so that mm-hmm. passive investors are that much better educated.
Yeah. And everyone writes their email direct to me, you know, so there's no investor relationship person, and they usually get response within a half a day from me. Right. And I like to talk to direct to investors so that at least they have direct access to me. Right. And I write a pretty detailed report every month because I want to really show what we are doing.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's two ways to think about this, right? I mean, you know, for investors, they are giving us opportunity. For us, it's like, we want to do bigger thing and investors are helping us. So I'm really like, okay, you're helping me. I'm going to give you all the information that we are doing. So I usually spend a lot of time writing my report. I put a lot of before after pictures. So people love to see all that because people like to see, you know, HGTV type of transformation of their property, especially if they're involved in it, right? So people know that we work really hard, and that's the ultimate most important thing. I mean, you need to be sincere in whatever you're doing, and you have to communicate that too, right? Be sincere, communicate very well with them, you know, keep on educating them, whether you're not doing deals or not doing deals, and that's how people build trust with you. And I want really to educate them, make sure that they know what they're doing. They get every stones unturned in the industry, right?
Where did most of your passive investors come from? I get it, as time goes on, there's word of mouth. You know, so where did it start? Did it start with people from work? Did it start, you know, how did you get the ball rolling?
So basically, I mean, as I said, there's not many investors that I'm getting from my social media network, right? So it's basically from word of mouth. When we started our single family houses, we were doing it ourselves without syndication, but we did tell a lot of people. And when we did our first 45 units, we did tell a lot more people saying that we are doing this, we're doing that, we're doing that. I suppose do a webinar on how did we do this 330%, because I think it's an interesting thing people want to know, right?
So absolutely.
And we did a lot of things. We reduced water, we reduced expenses on electric. We did so many things. We renegotiated contracts. And I want to communicate that to normal passive investors so that at least they know what are we doing, right? Otherwise, people think that these guys are just making money, just buying let the market run. That's not true. There's a lot of work in apartment, right? So, so it's basically word of mouth. A lot of my investors are not in social media. They are not in these any groups. They are basically professionals who are busy working, and they trust you.
Doctors, lawyers, engineers.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, yeah. I mean, they're all really professional, but business owners, doctors, engineers, lawyers, right. CPAs.
Just look, I think there's a lot of people out there that they make good money. Uh-huh. They don't know about syndication. You know, uh-huh. I know that I was in a number of different career paths where I made very, very good money, and I would have loved to have had somebody come uh-huh. to me and say, "Hey, Darren, you want to invest $50,000 or $100,000 in this huge apartment complex?" I had no idea you could do it. Uh-huh. So, you know, for them to be able to pull aside a portion of their money and allocate it to real estate and to have somebody that they trust, you know, manage that for them. That's uh-huh. huge.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, high net worth people, they just want to go to a financial advisor, right? And, you know, financial advisors, they have, you know, all kind of fees that tied to their whatever investment that they're recommending, especially mutual funds, stocks and all that, right? So all that industry runs on fees, right? That's how they make it so easy to trade in, trade out. You can buy very easily. It's because they make fees, right? And they make fees on an up market and down market, right? So, but, you know, real estate is not that, right? Real estate, you have to go out and educate people how it works, you know, that, you know, what is syndication? What kind of deal we buy? How do you make tax benefit, right? How do we turn around properties? And, you know, that's why I added so much of value. And that's how I grow my network, right? Through webinars. And a lot of people are just invested on a real estate with me and maybe they with a few other people, but they're not in big organizations and, you know, groups and, you know, any social media or what. They're busy with their life, right?
Right, but right. They're busy making money and then you help them multiply that.
Correct.
So how do you source most of your deals?
So in the beginning, I was sourcing a lot of off-market. I'm still sourcing a lot of off-market right now. I have my own marketing strategy where I go direct to sellers, even though now I'm not doing that a lot. But I think in the beginning, I started with, you know, direct marketing where we did yellow letter marketing, we did cold texting, and we did cold calling. Just to get our first deal, right? Because usually it's very important for newbies like me when I started, you know, it's very hard to get a good, decent deal, right? But getting a really good deal as your first deal, it will launch your career or will launch your, like I talked about 330%, right? That's a deal that we bought directly from the seller, right? And he sold it at market rate. But if he has gone to a broker and market to me, I mean, you have to go through that bidding process and you know, best and final, and prices are different, right? But he sold me at a really good price. I mean, it was a market rate. The cap rate was market rate, but the upside was so much, and I'm able to go and realize that upside, right? So yeah, we did direct to sellers, and after that, there's a lot of brokers. We start establishing relationship, and they know you're a true closer because you have closed one or two deals, and they bring off market deals to you. Right. I mean, 95% of the deals are done off market. Maybe 40% of it is through off market. Another 60% are, you know, off market, but it's on market.
Hey, I've had the, so I'm down the totem pole a little bit from you. So, you know, I've had the off market that comes to me. Hey, Darren, I'm just showing this to you. Right.
Yeah.
And then I call, you know, one guy, hey, do you want to partner on this deal? Oh, is it this deal? Yeah. And he names the deal before me, right? And I say, yeah. Oh, I saw that last week, you know. And then I call the next person, and then they tell me, oh, is it this deal? Oh, yeah, I saw that deal already. Like, I thought the broker said he was only showing it to me, right? Like, yeah. So
it's called an off-market premium. I'm telling you off-market, but it's very expensive because there's many people looking at it, right?
So, that's great. That's
yeah,
great.
I mean, we are trying to look for real, true off-market where there's, you know, doesn't know broker, the sellers are only talking to you, and they may not be in the mindset of selling, but because they like you, they may sell to you, right? So that is how I got started. But now I have a lot more broker relationship. And
what markets are you focused on? Are you Austin only, or are you
Austin and San Antonio?
Austin and San Antonio. Okay.
Yes, our properties are scattered in these two market.
And you going after B and C properties, or were you focusing on one area?
We started a lot with the C. Now we are moving more into the 1980s product, which it can be considered as B in Texas because the construction of change. So it's 1980s is what we are looking at nowadays.
Okay, very good. Talk to me about, has there ever been a time that you had fear, and how did you kind of push through that?
Absolutely. There's no such thing as everything is...
Most of the time I say that to people and they respond that way. Everybody has fear. Well, I talked to one guy and he was like, I'm just not scared, man. I don't know. I just plow ahead. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe he's the one that doesn't have fear. But so talk to me about when you have fear and how you push past that.
Oh, many times I have fear, right? So fear of underwriting wrongly, fear of exit cap rate, or what exit cap rate going to be, what is the rent growth going to be? Because whatever, when you underwrite a deal, you are basically trying to model tenants' behavior on Excel spreadsheet, right? That's what you're doing. And how do you estimate someone's behavior, right? There's a lot of data that's missing, right? So, how do you overcome that kind of thing? It's basically educating our passive investors, saying that this is all pro forma, and making sure that they know that, and of course, we want to try to underwrite as conservative as possible, but even conservative is a very relative term, right? So things change as the market changes.
Sure. In that example, you talk about, first maybe you underwrite it, on Excel, and then maybe to get a little comfortable, you go out and you actually shop the comps and you're like, oh, now I see that what they've done and they're already achieving those rents. And, if they could achieve those rents, I know I can, put these improvements in. I've done it in three other properties. And so we should be able to achieve those rents or just below it or whatever. So that could help give you confidence. And the fact that, each deal that you've done, has performed well and you've learned, you always learn, right? At every deal, I'm sure you and your wife talk about, this deal is different from this deal because, this happened and you learn that. So you know what to do on your next deal. Uh-huh. So that confidence helps propel you. But I think that in real estate, it's such a big investment. Even buying that first single family home, when you had to put 20% down for that 9% return, there's a lot of people that just let fear stop them from making that first investment. Whether that is a single family home, a big multifamily complex, whether that's doing a passive investment. I remember the first time I wired 50 grand into a passive investment, I emailed the sponsor and was like, please confirm receipt of the wire. No answer. I'm like, uh-oh. And this was somebody that people told me had a great track record. Then I call, voicemail, then I text, no response. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going on? And then I get a response saying, hey, Darren, I could see all these, deposits, but I can't see who it's from until tomorrow morning because the bank doesn't provide that detail till tomorrow. Well, if I had known that, I would maybe have been a little bit more at ease. So that I tell my investors that, hey, look, I may not know until tomorrow morning, but there's that fear that creeps in, and that fear could paralyze somebody from actually doing something. And, for you, it's changed your life such that, you came from Malaysia, with Intel, you brought $80,000 with you. You worked for Intel for a while. You got into real estate. You started seeing the power of wealth building and leverage and tax efficiency. And then you ended up going full time. And now you've been full time for how long?
Almost 3 years.
Almost 3 years.
Yeah.
And you said something earlier that I wanted to ask you about. You said you've always been entrepreneurial, but it sounded like your parents were not. So how did you become entrepreneurial? What influence did brought that about?
I'm not sure what influence, but you know, I always like to buy things at a discount. I mean, of course, everyone likes a discount, but if you get a discount compared to everyone else, you are the only one who's getting that discount. That's the ultimate feeling.
Nice. Right?
So
that's the true, you make your money on the buy.
On the buy, exactly. And I was just, thinking about, you know, being entrepreneurial. I mean, even in college, the other day when I went back home and I met some of my college friends, and they told me, James, you remember you sold that shirt? I said, what shirts did I sell? So I buy shirts for like, $10 and sell 3 shirts for $10 and, you know, sell them, you know, in retail, right? You know, one by one. I was like, wow. So I always had that, excitement about, you know, making money by doing some kind of, you know, buying wholesale, sell retail kind of thing, or finding that big discount where nobody else got it. That gives me a lot of boost in my motivation.
That's awesome. You know, because look, when you're starting out, a lot of people, you don't have a ton of money, right? Uh-huh. You have some capital, but you don't have to, you're trying to break in, you're trying to build a reputation for yourself. But then uh-huh. once you become a leader in the space, which I would put you in that category, you know, I don't know your personal wealth, but I'm sure that you're doing pretty good. Uh-huh. And then there has to be other intangibles that continue to drive you. You know, it's not just about the money. It's about the excitement of being able to find the deal, find the right deal, and then help other people, both from an education standpoint and building the wealth standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So we are very passionate about giving back to others in our community. We do a lot of programs because we are vertically integrated. So we do a lot of backpacks. We give school supplies to our kids, to the kids that living in the community. We do Thanksgiving parties. We do Christmas parties. We do Halloween parties, all kind of parties we do for the kids. And we just love it, right? And we are sponsoring a lot of orphan kids for education, especially in Africa, India, Mexico, and we share that vision with our staff. Recently, we started sharing it, and right now we have like almost 330 kids that we are sponsoring on a monthly basis for the education, and that's what keeps us driving. So we want to grow that to a much larger number, and I mean, I can just sit down and do nothing, right? But where's the fun?
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what's the next big stretch goal for you? I mean, you've written a book, you've got a private Facebook group, you've got a podcast, uh-huh. you've got 9 properties that you've had, one's gone full cycle. You know, uh-huh. what's the next big stretch goal for James?
Stretch goal is, so ultimately we are trying to see where do we go from here, right? I mean, how do we leverage our time? And we want to see how do we leverage our time to at least, you know, we're actually creating a foundation right now, 501c foundation.
Oh, awesome.
For orphanages. So we want to, you know, really go big on that and, you know, contribute, you know, a lot to, you know, other people's life, especially in terms of educating them, because I think, that is just the mission that we have in life.
That's fantastic. I read a book by, I don't know if you're into tennis, but Andre Agassi. Mm-hmm. He wrote a book, and I couldn't believe when I was reading it, he would say that he actually hated tennis. He ended mm-hmm. up becoming number one in the world. Mm-hmm. And he talks in his book about hating tennis. But he knew he was good at it. And a light switch kind of went off on him at some point when he realized that he could play tennis and use the money he made from that to build schools to help underprivileged kids.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden it changed his perspective on playing and winning. He was doing it for another cause that was bigger than just a nicer car or a nicer house. Yeah. And so that's fantastic when you see somebody, you know, that could just, you know, camp out on the beach, you know, but continues to add value to others and continues to try to excel in life so that they can help more people.
Yeah, I think it's end of the day, we have to figure out why we are here in this world, right? I mean, are you just going to get rich? I mean, you drive a nice fast car. I mean, I want to buy a nice fast car, but in this road, you can't even drive them, right? The police is going to come after you, right? So what's the point of buying all this fancy car when you can't drive it fast, right? And, you know, so since we are brought up, you know, not in a very wealthy family, so we don't have that big taste that we need to have it. I mean, yeah, we want to live comfortably and all that, but you know, you can make a dent in someone else's life. It's more fulfilling than you enjoying, you know, a much larger wealthy life. Which, how much are you going to change your life from $1 million, having $1 million in the bank, to $2 million? There's nothing much you can do in terms of changing your life, right? What are you going to do, right? I mean, are you going to be flying everywhere? No, you can't do that, right? So there's very small difference in lifestyle that happens when you go like from 1 million, 2 million, 3 million to 10 million. There's nothing much you can change, right? You can have good food, you can have good education and good health, you know. That's it. And that you don't need a lot of money for that.
Although, you know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking of the country song that talks about, you know, I forget the name of the song, but the guy starts singing and he's like, but I could buy a boat. <You know? laughs> And then I could buy a truck to pull it, you know, like, so that's the Texas songs, you know. Mm-hmm. But hey, what do you like to do outside of work?
Work.
Work and work and work.
Yeah. I mean, so the problem with entrepreneurs are like, we always like to look for new things, exciting things. And, you know, sometimes I'm always looking for deals, but, you know, I want to make sure that I don't, you know, divert too much to some other asset class or some other business, right? So yeah, looking for deals, looking for that discounts, you know, where do you find it? And, you know, just have fun teaching people, right? I mean, just free education. I said, a lot of people come to me and say that, James, you have added so much value in my life. I mean, through my books and my podcast. And whenever I go for meetup, people come and tell me, James, I thought I already know you, right?
So because, right.
I'm sure for you too, right? They already know you because, you know, you talk on podcasts and you have so much of educational content. And people have told me many times, you know, your book have changed my life. And
how that is incredible is that? Yeah. Because you know what? You mentioned that you didn't make a ton of money off the book and that a lot of people don't make a ton of money off the book. But, it, you know, one, it brings credibility. And two, it brings people that you may not have, you know, touched before. But the people that I've talked to that have written books, especially the first one, it's not easy. You know, like, it's a lot of your time and effort to not make a ton of money. But you do it because you want to impact more people and touch more people. So
I mean, especially when someone is writing a serious book, right? I mean, anyone can write, you know, can write a 2-day book and just publish it saying that they're an author. But to write a serious book, I took like almost 1.5 years to write my book, and I was working at that time, right? So
that's a big commitment.
It's a big commitment, exactly. And, you know, and I want to make sure it's done right. And I just do not want to just say I'm an author, right? I want to be a best-selling author, of course, but I want to impact people, right? I mean, I'm always sold almost 2,000 copies on my book in 12 months. And I didn't expect that. I mean, English is my third language, right? So, and I came from a school where they teach in a different language, right? So, and if I can change someone's life, you know, get top 15 real estate book by Jim Cramer, which is like crazy, right? And people have told me when I want to publish the book, hey, James, your book is not written very well. I mean, well, it's okay, fine. I'm gonna just. And but
what's the name of the book?
It's called Passive Investing in Commercial Real Estate: Insider Secrets to Financial Independence.
That's a short title, huh?
Yeah, I know. I need to make sure I put pack all the content into that title, right? So it's in Amazon, so you should be able to get it. But you know, I got really good reviews from third parties without me knowing, right? So that's a very fulfilling venture in my life.
That's fantastic. Well, James, I really appreciate you sharing your story and your time. And it just sounds like you're a guy who loves to give back. And I'm really appreciative that you took time out of your day when I came to Austin and we were able to meet face to face. You know, it's, you meet some people and they have an impact on you, and you know, you meet other people and it's just a meeting, right? And so I really appreciate having the time to get together with you. How do people reach out to you if they want to reach out to you?
So my website is achieveinvestmentgroup.com, A-C-H-I-E-V-E, achieveinvestmentgroup.com. My email is james@achieveinvestmentgroup.com. If you come to my website, there's an Invest With Us link on the top. So if anybody want to figure out how to partner with us, they can register there. And I have a free book offer for everyone. I'm just launching a campaign now on my free book to make sure that, you know, a lot more people get it, right? So
the book that you were just talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
You're giving it for free?
Yes, correct. Correct.
Listeners, you heard it. Go to his web. Is it on your website?
No, it's not on my website. It's actually
How do they get the free book?
You go to this website called passiveinvestinginrealestate.com, passiveinvestinginrealestate.com, and you should be able to get the book for free. I mean, there's a $3.95 processing fee, but you know, that's nothing. But if you go and buy it from Amazon, it's going to be, you know, $19 for the physical book, right? So
there you go. There you go. Thank you for sharing that with everybody. He's also got a Facebook group, and this guy is on a lot of podcasts. He has his own podcast, and we're going to be hearing about him for years to come. So thanks, James, I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah,
and, happy to. Absolutely. Until next time, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.